Our next case is 2021-51, the State of Ohio versus Miranda C. Smith. For the appellant, Mr. Hirsch.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, my name is Max Hirsch on behalf of Miranda Smith. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Ohio's rape law requires the state to prove that the person charged engaged in sexual conduct, and where the form of sexual conduct alleged is insertion, the state must prove that the person charged inserted a body part or object into another. Because the state failed to do so here, there was insufficient evidence to support my client's conviction for rape, and it must be vacated. By pleading no contest to the charge, my client admitted to the truth of the facts alleged against her, but not her legal guilt. Those facts being that she caused her child to penetrate her with a sex toy.
Counsel, are you conceding that your client is guilty of a crime?
Yes.
Which crime?
Gross sexual imposition.
All right, thank you.
So assuming that we agree with you, can we just modify the conviction to gross sexual imposition?
This court could. The remedy we would specifically ask for is the one this court used in State v. Pelfrey, where this court should vacate the top conviction being rape in this case and remand with instructions to the trial court to enter judgment of guilty on GSI. That would be the remedy.
But what about pandering obscenity and child endangerment?
Even if she did, I don't believe those would be lesser offenses of rape. And the reason why it would be a modification to GSI is this court said in State versus Johnson, which is a 1988 case, gross sexual imposition is a lesser included offense of rape. And given that the trial court would have discretion anyway to modify the rape conviction to the lesser included, as long as the facts support it, which we concede they do, then a modification to the lesser included is appropriate, not a different offense where a different offense that's not a lesser included.
But that's the only remedy is to send it back to the trial court.
Correct. That's one we'd want. In this case, we just want the narrowest remedy possible, just instruct the trial court to enter a guilty finding of GSI.
And resentence?
Correct, and sentence on GSI, correct.
And that's an F3?
Correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's one of the F3s that carries 5 years, right. And of course, this court's inquiry begins with the plain text of the rape statute, which provides that no person shall engage in sexual conduct with another under prohibited circumstances. And so the plain meaning of this provision is that it's the person who is charged who must engage in sexual conduct. Because sexual conduct is a defined term, this court does not use its plain and ordinary meaning, but rather it uses the definitions provided by the legislature. In relevant part, sexual conduct by insertion, which is what's alleged here, means, quote, the insertion, however slight, of any part of the body or any instrument, apparatus, or other object into the vaginal or anal opening of another.
Without permission, or what's the language about permission?
With respect to something like consent, that would fall under the substantive criminal statute, which would be under rape. The sexual conduct, the statutes defining sexual conduct or sexual contact only define what acts constitute sexual conduct.
Doesn't sexual conduct include the phrase without privilege to do so?
Yeah, privilege.
Oh, that's correct. Right. That would be correct. I'm sorry.
I misspoke when I said permission, but without privilege to do so.
Right.
Okay. How does that impact, if at all?
It doesn't have any impact here because the element we're challenging here is the sexual conduct element of the rape statute. So the central question is, did my client engage in sexual conduct? She caused another to engage in sexual conduct, but the rape statute does not criminalize causing another to engage in an act where the person who's accused themselves does not engage in sexual conduct as well. So my client caused another to engage in sexual conduct, which—
You don't think she engaged in sexual conduct?
She did not. No, she caused another to engage in sexual conduct, and that's specifically because sexual conduct by insertion is different from the other forms of sexual conduct. Sexual conduct by intercourse and sexual conduct by oral sex are defined as acts between persons. So all participants, whether that's consensual or not, this court pointed out in Jeffries that these terms don't make reference to consent. All persons would participate in those acts. Insertion is different. It's a unilateral act that one person does to another.
But again, you concede she engaged in sexual contact as defined.
She caused another to, she didn't engage in sexual contact either, but she caused another to engage in, to have sexual contact with her, which is expressly prohibited by the GSI statute. And a comparison of the GSI statute and the rape statute is helpful here. The rape statute only criminalizes situations where a person themselves engages in a particular act. The gross sexual imposition statute makes it unlawful for a person to have sexual contact with another or to cause another to have sexual contact with the offender. And sexual contact, like sexual conduct by insertion, also refers to another. Sexual contact refers to particular types of touching of another. So without the cause another language in the GSI statute, that statute would not criminalize what my client did here, but it does include the cause another language. If this court isn't convinced about the breadth or the lack of breadth of the rape statute, consider that the legislature regularly distinguishes between a person doing or engaging in an act versus causing another to do an act. So if the plain text isn't definitive here, then the statutory structure resolves that ambiguity.
Does the rule of lenity come into play here?
It would if this court were to find that A, the plain meaning isn't definitive, or that we don't offer, or that neither side offers the best plain meaning, and B, that the other canons of statutory construction do not resolve this case either, then the rule of lenity, this court could fall back on the rule of lenity if it finds that both sides at least offer a reasonable textual reading. In such a case, then this court would be required to construe the relevant statutes against the state and find that my client committed GSI but not rape. And just to flesh out those canons just a tiny bit more, the comparison of the GSI statute to the rape statute in this case, that refers to the canon of impari materia specifically, where this court tries to read related, or courts in general, try to read related statutory provisions together. In this case, that's chapter 2907, which defines sex offenses. And again, that chapter makes a distinction between a person doing an act versus causing another to engage in an act. And I want to back up to one more textual point as well. As I've mentioned already, the rape statute, as well as the definition of sexual conduct by insertion, both refer to another. If the another is to be the same person across those statutes, which would be a victim, then my client's conduct must be excluded. A contrary reading would have my client be the person in the rape statute, her child would be the another in the rape statute, but then, under the sexual conduct definition, my client would become the another, and that would, again, that would be an inconsistent reading of those two statutes together. Unless this court has any other further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is James Rader, Assistant County Prosecutor out of Highland County. I'll be arguing on behalf of the state appellee today. Defendants argue of sufficiency as whether or not her act, whether or not the act that occurred could be defined as sexual conduct. Before we get into the sexual conduct, I believe one of the important words in the definition of rape that is being overlooked is the word engage. If you look that up in the Black's Law Dictionary, engage is defined as to employ or involve oneself in or to take part in. In this situation, there is no question that the defendant did involve herself. She did take part in the act of sexual conduct. As counsel has pointed out, Your Honor had a question about the without privilege to do so that is in the sexual conduct, I would argue there was no privilege. Children cannot consent to sexual activities, a two-year-old child. There would not be any sexual conduct without the defendant's, the appellant's, involvement in it.
Counsel, how do you overlook the words of another?
I would argue that the of another that is in both the sexual conduct and the sexual contact definitions protects people from what they do to themselves. It protects them from putting things in places of themselves. The of another is when you bring another person into it. So
of another includes the perpetrator?
It can. In this situation, the two-year-old is the one who did the insertion into the mother at her instruction, at her request, while she videotaped it.
Yeah. I find the facts of this case repulsive, but the Court of Appeals said, fortunately, in their decision, fortunately, this doesn't happen all the time. I've never, ever heard of it before. Are you aware of any case that affirmed a rape conviction under facts similar to this?
The closest one that this appellee is able to find, and there was a couple, and they're in my brief, is the Allen case. First District, Hamilton County, 1986 or 85 case. In that case, the defendant was found guilty of a rape offense, where he instructed the victim to stick his penis into the defendant's anus. There was insertion. It was under the conduct definition of anal intercourse. However, the defendant was found guilty of that charge. He appealed it, and the Court of Appeals affirmed the decision. Now, the case was remanded, but it was only remanded for a sentencing issue, not on the act itself. Another one of the cases is the Sloan case, which is a 7th District case. Now, in that case, the defendant was charged and convicted of complicity to commit rape. In that case, the defendant had a minor victim engage in sexual conduct, intercourse with another minor victim. Once again, the defendant did not insert anything into anybody. He took part in it. He engaged in it. It would not have occurred without him being involved in it.
But you couldn't, you could not have charged the defendant with complicity because without privilege to do so wouldn't fit in the definition of rape.
I believe she could have been charged with complicity, and I believe under these.
But she told him to do it, so where's the without privilege to do so?
I would argue is just because mom says it's okay doesn't mean there is a legal privilege for that child to insert anything. That child cannot consent to that activity.
But then going to your issue about a child can't consent, if knowingly is the mental requisite for a rape, the child couldn't possibly be held to that mens rea, correct?
Well, I would argue that knowingly is not part of the mens rea in the rape statute. In fact,
okay.
There's no mens rea listed in the rape statute.
No, but it's generally implied if it's not otherwise stated.
I would agree. I think it could also fall under the reckless definition as well, under the mental culpability. But I think she still could have been, and the court could have found her guilty of the complicity to rape, because once again, the conduct would not have occurred without her participation, without her being involved in it.
Counsel, you start off talking about the word engage,
yes,
which is where I'd started looking. But later in that same phrase under 0.02A1, no person shall engage in sexual conduct with another.
Yes.
So who's the person and who's the another in this case?
In this case, the of another is the mother.
Is that the person?
No. The child is the one who did the insertion. So
right.
I would say that person would be the child inserted.
But the child is not charged with rape. For obvious reasons.
But once again, the conduct itself took place. And it kind of goes into whether or not, and it's not ascribing who did what. Same with whether it's intercourse, anal intercourse, oral sex, or what have you. Did that act itself occur? And in this situation, yes, it did occur. The two-year-old did it at the instruction of the mother, who was the of another in this situation.
With another.
Excuse me?
With another. I understand the word of another. I'm just saying with another is different than of another.
I would agree. And are you talking in the
2907.02A1, the first introduction?
Yes, with another. So, yes, I would say with another in the sexual conduct aspect is there's going to be two people involved. That goes of the of another language where it protects people from what they do to themselves. The minute you include somebody else, you start to engage in sexual conduct with another, two people. In this situation, the child, the two-year-old, and the mother, there was conduct. The child did perform the act at the instruction of the mother. The child would not have done that on his own, but for the mother's involvement, but for the mother engaging in the sexual conduct with the child.
So was the mother raping herself?
In effect, it could be.
Well, you just said that's not rape.
But it, yes, I would agree. Yes, because that. But when you include another person into what she was doing, her two-year-old son, then you get into the of another, then you get into the with another. So I don't believe, with regards to the definition of sexual contact, that it limits it to the defendant being the individual who has to insert it, an object into somebody else.
But you had other charges available to you, like pandering obscenity because it was being filmed and child endangering, but this is a plea. It wasn't a trial.
Correct.
And so I don't understand why you chose rape except for the higher penalty and perhaps leverage to get her to testify against other people.
Well, I was not part of the underlying trial aspect of the plea negotiations.
Yes.
The rape charge was actually amended from the 10-year limit to a 13-year limit to... So there was even an agreement to amend that charge to the, based on the age limit, because originally it was charged as sex under with an individual under the age of 10. They amended that upon plea negotiations to the age of 13, which would just give her a difference on her sentence.
So her sentence is 10 years to life? Is that right?
Yes, I believe it is. And it would also go into and I would like to address the complicity aspect. Counsel did indicate it in their reply brief that she could not have been found guilty of complicity because it wasn't in the indictment. That is inaccurate. This court, there's a litany of cases that address the complicity aspect where you can be found guilty as the primary actor or complicit with the act. And certainly with regards to the complicity aspect, you're getting into where she did aid and abet another one to commit this act. And the act was sexual conduct with her two-year-old son, asking him to do something to her. It is not I don't want to say the conventional type of rape charge that we look at, but certainly I believe under the plain reading, sexual conduct did in fact occur, and therefore it was with another, and therefore she is guilty of the rape charge.
Okay, and so your argument is for the language without privilege to do so, actually, that refers to the person who is doing the act, the person, not the other, right?
I would say, yes.
Focuses on the person performing the insertion.
Right. Did that person have the privilege to do the act?
Okay. And you're saying, I mean, without privilege to do so, in other words, who would have privilege to do so if somebody consented? If the person who was the recipient or the, you know, who the insertion was being done to gave you permission to do that, then you have privilege to do so.
I would agree.
Okay,
yes.
So any way you look at it, the child had permission to do this. He had instruction to do this.
And I would agree. And that obviously is the disgusting part of this. However, I would say that there was no privilege because a child cannot consent to sexual activity. Just because mom says it's okay doesn't mean it's legally right. Doesn't mean the child actually had the privilege, legally speaking. So,
well, what I look at it is that without privilege to do so is part of the victim's, you know, can say, I didn't agree to this. So there was no privilege there to do it. Here, it's just the opposite. I agreed, I facilitated, you know, I encouraged. So so I guess that phrase has nothing to do with the facts that we have before us.
I would say no. And I think that also gets back to some of the other cases that have been where individuals have been found guilty of similar circumstances. That Allen case, I think, is frankly close, one of the closest we can find on the facts, where he was not doing the one inserting, but was still found guilty of the rape charge. Another case that was cited was the Napier case, Ninth District, I believe. It was a rape charge where the defendant had a minor victim give oral sex to an adult female. Now, he was charged and convicted of rape, and that was reversed. And now the only reason it was reversed is because there was a question of whether or not, what part of the girl's head came into contact with the adult's vagina. They couldn't tell, so it did go down, get reversed. It wasn't reversed because the defendant wasn't the one doing the insertion. It was reversed on, they couldn't tell whether or not it was contact or conduct.
But those cases involved intercourse, right? In this case, we're talking about something that the statute specifically addresses, an object into the opening of another, right?
And frankly, I think the part of the without privilege to insert an object, I mean, those are four or five different things detailed in the sexual conduct statute. Frankly, the last one, the one that we're discussing here, in my opinion, would cover all of them, frankly, because an object is being inserted into another. So the fact that it is not specifically on point with the facts, and it's one's anal intercourse and one's oral fellatio or cunnilingus or what have you, I still think they're all encompassed by the insertion part. Something got inserted to somebody else. And I don't think in this case, under the, you know, counsel's argument is that the child really is the one that we should be charging with this crime, is kind of what I'm hearing on his behalf. However, I disagree with that, and I believe the plain reading of the statute, when you're using the word engage, it's almost, and I hesitate to use the word strict liability, but did she engage in it? Did she take part in it? It would not have occurred without her. And yes, it was at her instructions. Yes, I would say that you know, the without privilege does, you know, is something to call into question. However, that child had no privilege, legally speaking, because a child can't do that. A child's not allowed to consent to those activities. So based upon the case law that is presented, where that certainly aren't on point with regards to the facts, they are similar in scenario. None of those cases were struck down or reversed because the defendant wasn't the one doing the insertion. And this is another similar one of those cases, and I believe.
But in all those cases, I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. The person in whom something was inserted was not the person charged.
Correct.
In this case, the person in whom something was inserted was the person charged.
Correct.
So that makes those cases kind of a little different.
Except the Allen case was...
Yeah.
The male, I mean, was charged.
Correct.
And he was the person who had the child's penis inserted.
That is correct. Yeah. And I would also say the Sloan case is just as similar, even though it was a complicity commit rape charge. The defendant did not insert anything into anybody. He had victim one, minor, insert into victim two, minor, and vice versa.
Right.
That's truly complicity. I mean, that's inciting or complicity.
I would agree with you, and I think that was a rightfully decided decision and was affirmed. And I believe in this case, the mother could have been found guilty of complicity, but it doesn't require it.
But for rape, the without privilege to do so in that complicity scenario just doesn't seem to work.
And I would still go back to the fact that a child cannot consent regardless of what the parent says.
But the Chief Justice said, doesn't privilege go to the victim and whether the victim consented or not?
Yes, but the victim in this case is the 2-year-old being involved in sexual conduct. Now, with regards, once again, the complicity is accurate. I believe she aided and abetted the offense. She aided and abetted the 2-year-old to do this. It would not have occurred because I highly doubt that the toy came out of the kid's toy box. So I would say, without a doubt, she's the one that was engaging in it. Of course, the 2-year-old was with her at her direction and at her insistence to do these acts. So once again, I do believe that there is sufficient evidence, and I believe sufficient demonstration that she did engage in with sexual conduct with her 2-year-old child, and therefore should be her conviction for rape should be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel?
I have 3 points on rebuttal, Your Honors. The first being addressing the use of the word engage or its significance. My friend on the other side suggests that it covers a situation where a defendant is merely involved in an act. But in the context of the rape statute where it says no person shall engage in sexual conduct, the best reading of that phrase is that the person charged must be the one who does the act.
What about the Allen case? Explain how that's different.
The Allen case is different because it involved intercourse, specifically anal intercourse.
But the sexual conduct part is privilege, however slight, of any part of the body or any instrument, apparatus, or other object into the vaginal or anal opening of another, which is a much broader, inclusive section of the includes vaginal, includes intercourse and all of the others, plus the insertion.
That's true. But in Allen, it can't be sustained on an insertion theory, but it can be sustained on an anal intercourse theory, because anal intercourse is an act between persons regardless of sex. So if someone causes another to engage in anal intercourse with them any which way, both persons have engaged in sexual conduct, but insertion is different because it's a unilateral act that only one person participates in, because it refers to another as opposed to being an act between persons. And one other thing just on engage as well, that the state's position here runs into the canon against surplusage. This would be a different case if the rape statute were read as it is, but the GSI statute, if the GSI statute, for example, only said have sexual contact and didn't include cause another language, this court should find that it's significant that the legislature, again, regularly makes a distinction between doing an act and causing another to engage in an act. If this court finds that engaging in an act also necessarily includes causing another to engage in an act, then the cause another language, which appears many times in the code elsewhere, would be surplusage. And to address, Allen and the other states' cases, they all suffer from one or two flaws, that being that every one of those cases involve intercourse or oral sex, which again are acts between persons. None are rape by insertion cases, and insertion is a different class of sexual conduct based on the plain textual reading. In addition, I think two of those four cases are also complicity cases, which were never alleged here. But even assuming the question of complicity is properly before this court, and again, I'll assume that sexual conduct occurred, even though I agree with some of Your Honor's points about the privilege that her child was privileged to do this act in this case. But even assuming that, as Justice Bruner pointed out, the other elements of rape aren't met here, even assuming the child engaged in sexual conduct, because there's no allegation that my client was incapacitated. Obviously, she's not under 13 years old. Obviously, she consented to this act. So even assuming all these other things, other essential elements of rape aren't met here. And the final point I want to make is essentially what the state's case seems to hinge on here is that they're suggesting that the occurrence of sexual conduct is enough to sustain a sex crime. But that obviously can't be true. And the state blurs the distinction and the elements, if you will, of sexual conduct versus the rape statute. And one point that's really important is they talk about the consent part of the definition of sexual conduct, but consent is a question also for the rape statute as well. So when they're being asked about the consent part of sexual conduct, it should really, again, it should all that the question should always circle back to the substantive provisions of the rape statute, which focus on the acts of an offender. Unless this court has no further questions, I'll simply ask again for this court to vacate my client's rape conviction and remand to the trial court with instructions to enter a judgment of guilty on gross sexual imposition. Thank you.
Thank you. Take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.